Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So this is the full moon night observance day, and it's also 3 weeks until the end of the retreat. So just to plant that in consciousness, and thinking how to use the remaining time of the winter retreat and trying to use it skillfully. And during this period of retreat, it's a sort of an excellent opportunity for developing continuity in the meditation practice and to sort of experiment with different types of practice, different ways of approaching the practice, seeing what works, what's helpful. One of the things that Ajahn Amaro brought up in the talk on Saturday night was just the reminder or the perspective that the really using the Four Noble Truths, that the practice really is to try to bring these Four Noble Truths into play, make them real, make them come alive, utilize them. When we think of the Eightfold Path, the first sort of step of the Eightfold Path of right view, one of the ways of defining right view is the right view that sees the noble truth of suffering, noble truth of the cause of suffering, noble truth of the cessation of suffering, noble truth of the path leading to cessation of suffering. That's the fundamental view, perspective, understanding that one begins the practice of the path with. And there's also the the way of I've seen it explained as the second aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path is right intention, right thought, samma sankappa, and that they defined in a similar way, in the sense of thought that is directed towards the noble truth of suffering. Thought that's directed towards the cause of suffering. thought that is directed towards the cessation of suffering, thought that is directed towards the path leading to cessation of suffering. This is the way to direct the thinking process. So these are aspects of wisdom, the wisdom qualities that we bring to the path, bring to the practice, bring to the training. And they really trying to pay attention to those. If we don't get our, say, the actual view and the way of directing the mind correctly, then it then all the rest of the path doesn't really fall into place. If you want to go to Ukiah, you go out of the exit of the monastery and you turn left. And if you turn right, then it's a long way to Ukiah, especially in the winter time, over those creeks that are through the Willets, over the hills. You might get stuck there. Now that, when we begin the practice, our meditation practice, our cultivation in different ways, what's the fundamental view? What's the fundamental perspective on these Four Noble Truths? And we say, what are we? We say the noble truth of suffering. What are we paying attention to? I mean, there's a whole range of things, but again, sort of fundamentally, just paying attention to the five aggregates that are subject to clinging, upadana khandhas. This is form, feeling, perception, mental formation, consciousness. Just these things that are the basis of our experience. It's the body, physical form, feeling, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, neutral. Perception in terms of memory and labels that we place on things. Mental formations, just the thought processes, whether they're wholesome or unwholesome, skillful or unskillful. Consciousness, just the direct act of cognizing the sense bases, just our basic sense contact. When they're subject to clinging, subject to attachment, subject to desire, these are the, that's the, there's an intrinsic quality of dissatisfaction, discontent, suffering that's there. When you pay attention to the second noble truth of suffering, then the paying attention to those, the actual clinging, attachment, desire itself, that is in relationship to these five khandhas, the experience that we have of being, just being alive, being cognizant. What is it actually like? We spend so much of our time either just trying to get things that will make us feel comfortable, happy, pleasurable, trying to get away from the things that are uncomfortable, unpleasant, that we don't like, don't want, don't agree with. And that's actually the story of our lives, sort of running towards something and running away from something. Running around in circles. That's the basic human existence. It's like Ajahn Chah. One time, he used to be able to. There's everything, sort of all the simple things around him were props for giving Dhamma talks. That's the having a spittoon next to him. So, you know, we're just human beings. We're just like ants, just sort of like red ants, and get on the edge of the spittoon on this, and they go, as they go around and around, and they think they're getting somewhere. And sort of, and it's just like that. And he said, that's what human beings are like. He said, they just get onto a track, and they keep going around and around that same track, think they're getting somewhere, but actually all it is just, you know, like and dislike, wanting, not wanting, agreeing, disagreeing, getting just around and around, just those basic moods and changing thoughts and perceptions, just around and around. So that to actually recognize that, think, oh, that's those reactions of desire and clinging, that just keeps me going around in a circle. And there is a way out, and it's cessation of the third noble truth, cessation of suffering. It's the relinquishing of desire and attachment. Really paying attention to that. Relinquishing, saying, I have to let go, I have to actually draw that. And then, of course, the path leading to cessation is the development of that wisdom aspect that is supported and maintained with sort of virtue and the meditation, cultivations in effort, in mindfulness and concentration. So that the practice it may seem, it's pretty basic. As soon as you pick up your first book on Buddhism, you'll almost invariably come across the Four Noble Truths. You know, it takes a while to really apply it properly, to really penetrate it. And even if we see the benefit or the truth, the beauty in it, you know, still we find ourselves following the same old habits. Mm-hmm. Down that track of suffering, so that to really use this opportunity to pay attention to really shine the light of awareness and attention on these fundamental truths. We have a lot of time for meditation. So to use that the time that we have to really cultivate a continuity of attention, awareness, and cultivating the states of stillness, of clarity. In the meditation itself, using the object of meditation as a focus for or say giving oneself to the meditation object. It's like the, say with the breath, and using the breath as that's what I tend to use myself. It's what I tend to use as an example. But the principles can be applied to all the different meditation objects. But using the breath as the object, just really giving oneself to the paying attention to the breath itself. You know, either we're trying to get something out of it, or trying to figure it out, or we're sort of resisting. I mean, there's all these ways that we layer over just something that is quite simple, and just to be able to give oneself to it. It's the rhythm of the breath coming in, the rhythm of the breath going out. With the instruction that the Buddha gives, and, just knowing, this is a long in breath. This is a long out breath. Breathing in long. The meditator knows he breathes in long. Breathing out long, he knows he breathes out long. Just knowing that much. Breathing in short, he knows breathing in short. Breathing out short, you know. Just knowing that much. You know, one doesn't have to analyze it, figure it out, create a story around it, get in competition with it or contention with it. All it is a breath. It's just a breath coming in, breath going out. What is anything else that we add to it is just complication and suffering. That's the First Noble Truth. It's responding to it out of desire, attachment, proliferation. And it's an example of, oh, there is the First Noble Truth. This breath that is you know, either one is desiring to be a certain way or reacting out of boredom and aversion, or you know, all the different way responses that we have. And then we say, oh, that's just the First Noble Truth. Okay, why not just give myself to it? Why complicate it? Why make it something more than is necessary? All it is an in-breath and an out-breath. Of course, it's a wonderful mirror to actually see what the mind is doing, and exactly why the Buddha teaches the meditation and what the application of mindfulness. The application of mindfulness is not just to get what one wants, follow one's desire and try to manipulate the world in a way that you can get what you want. It's a mirror to see what is actually going on within the mind. What's the ways that we tend to create suffering? What's the underlying cause of suffering that's there? Then we can see the Four Noble Truths in this simple rhythm of the breath coming in, the breath going out. But it's, you know, to learn how to work with the breath so that one is able to create a sense of, one, a sense of letting go, and a sense of ease. It's that paying attention to the, what's the body feel like as I breathe in? How can I relax the body? How can I actually even know what my body's doing? What, as I breathe in, what's the posture like? Is there tension there? As I breathe out, where does the awareness settle? What is the feeling in the body? How can I relax that so that I can just pay attention to the sensation of the breath? Or do I need to just bring awareness into different areas of the body? To just get a sense of ease and relaxation. Because it's important to have that feeling of ease and relaxation, being settled. Also being alert. I mean, there's a sense of relaxing, but there's also a sense of energizing that one needs to bring into that watchfulness or awareness of the breath. There's a balance that needs to be struck. So that just paying attention to the breath coming in, the breath going out. Does it feel constricted? Does it feel spacious? How to allow it, the breath and the body to just feel kind of light and spacious. Or does it feel right off the bat light and spacious so that it's spaced out and disconnected? You know, there was a need to anchor oneself. There's a balance that needs to be brought to that cultivation of awareness. And where is the suffering? Where is the peace? Where is the ease? Where is the complication? And it's just using this cultivation of the mindfulness of breathing, both to cultivate that clear sense of tranquility and clarity, but also to establish that understanding. This is an opportunity for experiencing those Four Noble Truths, not in a analytical, intellectual way, but in a direct experiential way. You touch those Four Noble Truths. You're able to really feel, that's uncomfortable, that's suffering, that's not quite so easeful. Or that's, that feels really good. You know, you're sort of settling into that, settling into the breath, settling into the recognition of the experience in the present moment, as opposed to just trying to make the mind conform to an idea or a concept or an ideal that one's formed of what you think you should be, what a meditator should be, what a meditator should be experiencing. Just allowing the breath and the awareness to settle and become more focused, letting things drop away. It's that sense as the breath is like picking after one's worked through some of the basic movements and contortions that the mind wants to go into, and it's things settle. Then trying to refine the sustaining of attention on the breath. You know, picking a point, say like at the tip of the nose. And then just really trying to sustain awareness at that point. And if the mind isn't ready for it, then forcing it and pushing it to stay at a point is not going to be comfortable. But as you've laid the foundation, then there's a point where, oh, that's the natural thing to be doing, is to be settling on one point and nurturing that awareness at that one point. Because you start seeing, well, everything else is just, yeah, it's just part of the first noble truth. You say, well, man, this is the way forward. This is a way of clarity and ease. That easing into that sustaining of attention at one point as the breath comes in, as the breath goes out. As the breath, the body of the breath, and relaxing the sensation around that, relaxing the awareness, but through attention and interest, because you see that if the mind goes out to other projections, hopes, into the future of planning, back into the past of, you know, just regurgitated memories. What's the point? It's just more, you see, one of the words that Ajahn Chah used to use to encourage us how to experience or attend to our experience was, you know, in Thai, say, oh, canon. And means it's just that much. It's that's all it is. You know, whether it's something that is unpleasant, unwanted. You say, well, it's just that much. Why get entangled in it? Why get upset? It's all it is. It's just that much. Just drop it. Set it aside. Or things that were there, and there's a fascination or a desire coming up, something that seems really worthy of one's proliferation. And you think, why? It's just that much. It's only that much. Just put it down, drop it. Just dwelling in awareness is so much more important, so much more satisfying, so much more to the point of what the practice is about. And it's this letting things go and saying, oh, it's just that much. You know, and there's some things, of course, that you say, well, it's just that much. And then another voice immediately, of course, goes, no, it's not. This is really important. You can't not think about this. You say, you have to really sort of bring it to, that's canon. It's all that. That's all it is. It's only that much. It's no big deal. So that really you're letting things go, you're dropping things, but what it's doing is also nurturing awareness and sustain mindfulness. So that, and then that's where having the object of meditation is a helpful focal point. Just because it's the nature of the mind to have something to do. So it's helpful to have something to do that is neutral, is not spinning you out in some way or another, so that the breath, and just the in-breath, the out-breath, paying attention, sustaining attention, holding awareness in a way that is interested and focused. Not tightly focused, but focused, so that it's not acquiescing to whatever distraction comes up. Because stuff comes up in the mind, but it doesn't. One doesn't have to bite it. One doesn't have to take the bait. Just recognizing, that's the interest wants to stay there. And as the awareness on the breath becomes settled and sustained, then there's different ways of paying attention to experience as well. And this is where the Buddha gives a lot of leeway for us to reflect and investigate on experience. So it's not just sort of halting everything and being totally able to fix the mind on that object and it's going to stay. Some people can do that. I sure can't. So that the using of the experience that we have, this is why there's, say, four foundations of mindfulness that the Buddha gives the basis of practice. The feelings, the feelings that arise, especially as the mind becomes settled. And mindfulness becomes consistent. Qualities of pleasure and joy, rapture can arise. In the Buddhism, breath comes in, breath goes out, knowing that those feelings are there. Recognizing the nature of feeling as it conditions the mind. As a feeling, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, just fundamental feeling and perception. These are what condition the mind. They start the mind turning and churning and moving. Just when one is able to just stay with the as the breath comes in, they say, that's just a feeling, experiencing that, and that's just a perception. Whether we label it good or bad, or the perception is one of wanted or unwanted, and saying, that's just a perception. The feeling of reception, or what proliferate the mind. And again, staying with the breath, calming basic, because that's basic to the mind. You don't sort of eradicate or erase feeling and perception. Those are natural functions of the mind. But you can calm them, you can settle them. Just as the breath comes in, one can be attentive to calming and settling. You're saying, oh, that's perception, that is feeling. One can turn and direct attention to the calmness and settling of the breath. Paying attention to the mind, sort of the mind itself. What is the basic aspect of the mind in terms of knowing, experiencing moods and impressions and thought? I say, well, just experiencing that, but then paying attention to the breath as it comes in, as it goes out, and you sort of, and then that refrain of, oh, that's all it is. It's just that much. That's not usually how we relate to it. It's, if I think it must be true. If I think it must be real. If I think it's absolutely, this is so important. What could be more important than what I think? I mean, that's how we keep suffering. it's just that experiencing the mind I breathe in, experiencing the mind I breathe out. And that's experience it from that perspective of, oh, that's just that much. It's just a mental experience. The Buddha encourages us to gladden the mind. There's an advantage to the qualities of gladness, of well-being. Real sense of experientially, it feels different to experience gladness and well-being as opposed to negativity and confusion. I mean, it's just is there are different experiences. They affect the mind in different ways. And the Buddha encourages us to pay attention to what gladdens the mind, what brings well-being to the mind. As one breathes in, as one breathes out. Because those are the, as we nurture those wholesome states of mind, there's a natural ability to settle in that it's not just the gladness of getting what you want or the gladness of finding something exciting to do with the mind, but it's the gladness that is associated with wholesome dhammas. That in line with the dhamma, and then there's a sense of coolness that comes, a sense of peace and clarity. Just there's a natural progression that happens, so that it's easy to let go when the mind is feeling a sense of well-being, gladness. The body is at ease, the mind is at ease, can put things down. Are they the kind of the intrinsic agitation that comes with doubt or restlessness, confusion, aversion, desire-based grasping. They have an inherent agitating quality to them. It's difficult to settle. The Buddha gives this very specific encouragement, gladdening the mind, we breathe in, gladdening the mind, we breathe out. And so one trains the mind in this way. And concentrating the mind, settling the mind, allowing the mind to establish itself firmly. And paying attention to what is it that can free the mind? And of course it comes back to this simple seeing what is suffering and seeing that can be let go. That can be set down. It can be, you know, the mind oftentimes wants to go back and pick it up, but you realize what can be put down. It can be, and when it's put down, when it's set down, and you say, oh, it's just this much. There's a lightness that comes. And you see, and it's just paying attention to that quality, and saying, what's that feel like? You know, we learn from that experience. I mean, that's paying attention to the third noble truth. It's the cessation of suffering, even if it's just a tiny whisper. That's when we gain the confidence and say, "Oh yeah, that's where I want to put my effort, attention, interest." That's what that feels fulfilling, and just as we continue to direct attention, pay attention, it gains momentum. As we pay attention to the aspects of impermanence. There's the last section in the discourse that the Buddha gives on mindfulness of breathing. It's paying attention to impermanence, anicca, the vilaka of dispassion, the quality of cessation, of quality of relinquishment. Seeing, seeing these qualities of, there's the Four Noble Truths. It's seeing the aspect of unsatisfactoriness, seeing the aspects of impermanence. You know, what is impermanent? As the refrain that goes in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, seeing what is impermanent. You know, is that pleasurable or is it unpleasurable? You know, is it wrong? You know, what is constantly impermanent, changing, unstable, uncertain? That's not pleasurable. That's not fun. Mm-hmm. And if seeing that clear, so seeing those aspects, those characteristics. Impermanence, change, uncertainty, seeing the quality of unsatisfactoriness, of discontent that inevitably comes up, the sense of suffering. And it doesn't have to be suffering in terms of sort of miserable and depressed. It's just sort of, oh, that's not really fulfilling. It's not really peaceful. It's not really what I want to take as a refuge. And seeing those aspects of non-self, I can't make this mine in any way. the I, me, and mine doesn't have a place to stand here. Never did. That seeing these qualities is like, and this is something that one needs to do, not just in the meditation, but in the day-to-day life, in ordinary circumstances, paying attention to the things around one, nature, everything. It's teaching us all the time, because those are its characteristics. So that to see that, reflect on it, pay attention to it. And then when it comes to the meditation, the mind is subtle, it's peaceful, it's clear. You see, it has an impact on the mind. And one can't just pick it up and try to force the label onto experience, but it's as one's reflected on and investigated it in other circumstances, and it has an impact on the mind. In the same way that one practices with let's say as if one were practicing on a musical instrument. No one has to spend a lot of time doing the actual practicing and learning scales and learning techniques, and then when it comes to an actual performance, then it becomes quite natural. Or if one is in sports, one has to actually do a lot of the exercises and training and whatnot. And then when it's an actual game, then it's there. So in the same, in this meditation, is we take in these different reflecting on these different aspects of truth in all of our circumstances. And then when it comes to the meditation, it becomes, it naturally arises, that investigation, that reflection, that application. And then it starts to make more sense. So that the taking of these, the meditation and working with it, in exploring it, and cultivating the aspects of peace and clarity. As one is working on the settling of the mind through the meditation, then there is this aspect of wisdom, understanding arises, but it also has to have a foundation, a base. And one has to have reflected on these things previously as well. So that to bring these aspects of the mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, learning how to integrate these, learning how to see how they work together. Because there's sometimes when as we're practicing, the mind is ready to settle, and it feels comfortable to settle and to one point, and sometimes it's not. And how do we apply the mind? What do we use as a support? What are ways of reflecting so that the mind is able to take interest, is able to let go, is able to see clearly. So this is a big part of the practice, is the cultivation of understanding of how to apply the mind, how to work with it, how to be patient with it, how to encourage it, how to support it. So that this next few weeks, we have say 3 weeks left of the retreat. I encourage everybody to try to use this time skillfully. Ajahn Amaro gave a talk to the Sangha after the Patimokkha. It's that sense of don't get trapped by thinking, oh, there's only 3 weeks left, it's almost over, or sort of slacking off or finding distractions, or bemoaning the fact that there's only 3 weeks left. Oh, there's only 3 weeks left. Oh, damn. It's just this present moment, over and over. Whatever we had to, if we're complicating it or bringing the past, right, and going out to the future, that's a missed opportunity. Just really bring this present moment practice and delight in the opportunity to practice. So offer that for reflection this evening. Sadhu Karam Tamase Sadhu Sadhu